Good morning. Today's daf is Chulin Ayin Aleph 71. We are Ayin Amud Beis. We are towards the top of the Amud, and we're starting today with Rav Yossi Aglili. The Mishnah taught us yesterday that if a person were to insert his hand into an ubar, into the mother, touching an ubar, and Rachmanus, the ubar is not alive, the ubar is dead. So, is that going to communicate tuma, or is that not going to communicate tuma? So there are two opinions in the Mishnah, the Tanakam and Rav Yossi HaGalili. Tanakam in the Mishnah says that no tumah will be communicated. Well, then does not matter what the nature of the animal is, whether the species of animal is kosher or not kosher. Still is going to be a tahora. Now, it could be a little bit confusing. I made this point yesterday, but I'm totally comfortable making it again. It could be a little bit confusing because later today we're going to be learning about the concept of tumah blua. Comes up actually in today's daf. Today's daf, Ayin Aleph, is in fact the source in the Gemara and Shas for this concept of tumah blua, that when I have tumah inside something else, so it will be protected and it will not be transmitting any type of tumah. Even if you touch it while inside, it's not going to communicate tumah. And over here on the sugya of an animal, so we are not discussing and it does not become relevant to the discussion of an animal. Now, why not? So again, I pointed to Tosos yesterday. Tosos raises and addresses that question, that this is not going to be related necessarily with tumah blua, even though it sounds awfully similar. But be that as it may, this is not a function of tumah blua, but rather it's a halacha, which we're going to explain a little bit better in just a moment. In the Mishnah, Rav Yossi Aglili said no, that if you insert your hand into a non-kosher animal and you touch the dead fetus of a non-kosher animal, so you're going to become tameh. But if you are touching the fetus inside of a kosher animal, you're going to be tahara. What's the difference between kosher and non-kosher as it relates to tum and tahara? So stay tuned, because that's going to be a big part of the conclusion of yesterday's daf and a little bit into today's daf as well.
Because you can't use a kal v'chomer that we said.
Well, okay. We're gonna say. So, what is behind the Tanakhama? So the Gemara yesterday, where we did this yesterday. I'm just reviewing. So what's behind the Tanakama is a Kavachomer. The Kavachomer says as follows. Look, the parak over here, the fourth parak of Chulin, is dedicated to Ben Pekua. What is the idea of Ben Pekua? You can have a fetus inside of a mother, Yishech the mother, and that Shechita would serve for the mother and for the fetus as well. So if you can imagine that the environment of the mother gives it enough status in which Shechita of the mother is going to allow the consumption of the fetus, so for sure, what the mother can also do is afford protection for the fetus and protecting it from not transmitting its tumah if, in fact, the fetus is a source of tumah, i.e. it's a nevela. Good. That's the kavachomer of behind the Tanakama, which only then begs the question. So that kavachomer is great for behemah tahora, right? Meaning if it's a kosher animal, so then, yeah, the starting part of the kavachomer is great because you shech the mother and then you're allowed to eat the fetus. That's, of course, not true for a behemah tameah. So the Gemara says, so how then does it get extended from a kosher species to a non-kosher species? So the Gemara says, and I'm just going to say it succinctly, hekesh, meaning you're right. The kavachomer only gets us to a behemah tahora. But what a hekesh does is that a hekesh extends it from the behemah tahora to the behemah tameah. Adkan, that takes us to the end of Shitas of Tanakama. What about Rav Yossi? Rav Yossi Aglili, who says that this halacha is only limited to a behemah tahora, but not a behemah tameah. Why should that be? So Phil suggested just a moment ago, well, he holds the kavachomer. But what is he going to do with the hekesh? He doesn't subscribe to the hekesh? Okay, good. So that's where we're starting up with today. So Rav Yossi Aglili, my timer. So what's behind Rav Yossi Aglili? On Ayin Amud Beis, about a third of the way down, first words of the line is Ubra Tahor, and now we're Mamshech. So my timer. So I'm Rav Yitzchak, so the Gemara is going to give basically two approaches how to understand Rav Yossi Aglili. It's going to be a little bit confusing because one is Rav Yitzchak and the other is Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Okay, but the first one is Rav Yitzchak. The pasuk says, V'chol Alecha Kapal, V'chol Achaya Oleches. So recording over here from the Pesukim in Parshat Tzav, and the anything that's Holech Al Kapav. Now, we all know, we've gone through this at the end of the third parak of Chulin, not so long ago, that the identification of a kosher versus non-kosher animal is going to be contingent on two factors. One is Malagera, and the other is Mafis Parsa, split hooves. So when a animal has split hooves, so there's pretty much one way to say it, and that's Mafis Parsa. You could also say, the Gemara is going to use such terminology, holech al shmona, walks on eight legs. How do you get to eight legs? It's very, it's actually very simple. Because each foot is split, so you count it as two. Two times four, that's eight. Okay, it's another way to describe a kosher animal, holech al shmona. When I talk about a non-kosher animal, so we have a lot of different ways to describe it. One way to describe it is that it's kalot. Right, that's you're not going to see that lashon in the Torah, but lashon haGemara, lashon Chazal is that it's kalut. The foot is fused together. You'll see another way to describe it, and that's holich al kapav. It walks on its palms. And again,
that's two different things. Kalut is by a hoofed animal, like a horse.
Okay, fine.
And holich al kapav is like a bear.
Fine. But still, the idea is it's not split. So holich al kapav. So he's walking now on his paws. So that's another way to describe a non-kosher animal. And also another Lashon of Chazal is holich al arba, walks on fours, which again is a nice contrast between walking on eight. Good. So now we got all the Lashonos down, we got all the terminology down, just a number of different ways of just simply saying kosher versus non-kosher in that the hooves are split or not split. So the Pasuk says, chol holech al kapav, b'chol achayo leches. So the Gemara now is darshaning the Pasuk. Rav Yitzchak saying this is the Pasuk used by Rav Yosef Glili in order to arrive at his drasha. And let's read the Pasuk a little more carefully. V'chol holech al kapav b'chol ha-chaya. The holech al kapav is in the chaya. So ma'achi kapayim b'chaya temesilach. So this Pasuk, when read in context, is talking about what is going to be tameh. Which animals are going to be tame? So if you're a mahalche kapai, meaning you're a non-kosher animal, that's inside of a non-kosher animal, i.e. the fetus of a non-kosher animal within a non-kosher animal, so you're going to be now a source of tuma, even while inside. The Gemara says, interesting. So over here, what we're really doing is identifying the status of the fetus inside of the mother based on its hooves, whether it's split or fused. So the Gemara says, so let's consider now. Let's say you have a cow, kosher animal, obviously has split hoofs. And let's say the fetus inside is a mutated animal, which has fused hoofs. And we've discussed these mutations back and forth very often. Under these circumstances, so let me ask you a simple question. According to our drasha of Rav Yosef Glili, you touch that dead fetus. What's your status? You should be tamei. Right. But the Mishnah doesn't say that. The Mishnah just simply makes a distinction between behemah tamei versus behemah tahora. And we make no distinctions based on whether it is a split hoof or a fused hoof.
You're talking about the mother in the Mishnah.
In the Mishnah, the Mishnah just simply says behemah tahora versus behemah tamei. Yeah. Good. So over here, but based on the drasha, Even if the mother's kosher, but the animal, the mutated fetus inside, which is dead, I know it's a funny sentence. The mutated fetus inside, which is dead, has a fused hoof. So then you should become tameh. But again, we know Rav Yosef Glili doesn't conclude like that. But meanwhile, the drasha would head us in that direction. So mahalchei kapam mahalchei arba v'hai mahalchei arba mahalchei shmonahu. So the Gemara says, yeah, but if you look at the pasuk in context, you'll see the pasuk's talking about where the mahalach arba is in a mahalach arba, meaning that the mother has to be a non-kosher animal. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, and meanwhile, the case that you gave me over here is that the mutated animal is inside of a kosher animal. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, okay, so I'll tell you what, we'll just simply address your answer will turn into the next question. So, v'hai mahalach arba mahalach ishmonu. So par b'mei gamal lo titame de mahalach ishmonu b'mahalach arba hi. So the Gemara says, okay, so how about this? Let's say I have a para inside of a camel. And again, the mother's a camel, the mother's not kosher, and the mother does not have split hooves. And the fetus inside, once again, is a mutated fetus, where it did have split hooves. So now you want to tell me that based on the way we're darshaning the pasuk, you touch this dead fetus, you're going to be tahor. But again, we know that Rav Yosef Glili does not factor in whether the hooves are fused or not fused. In other words, according to Rav Yosef Glili, it's just one factor, kosher or not kosher. If the mother's not kosher, the dead fetus inside is going to be a source of tumah. So the Gemara says, so now what do you say about that? Holech v'chol holech l'rabos. So the Gemara says, okay, so for this we have an additional drasha. So v'chol holech is there as a ribuy halashon. to come and teach us that even the scenario where the fetus inside is a little bit mutated, its hooves are split as opposed to fused, still, if it's in a non-kosher mother, it's going to be tamei. So the Gemara says, "Para b'mei gamal kalab." I'm sorry, "V'chol ochle rabbis para b'mei gamal." Sorry. Next, "Kalab b'mei kluta li tamei de mahachi arba b'mahachi arbahu." So the Gemara says, "Okay, now what about the following? Let's say the mother is a kosher animal. The feet are fused. That was a mutation, meaning that the mother itself came from a kosher species. And as we learned earlier, we're going to learn again later in the Masechta. As long as the mother's kosher, that which comes out kol ayotzei mina tahor." Tahor. And even though the fetuses, or I should say better, the child's feet are fused together, but nevertheless, it's kosher. And now, what about its progeny? Its progeny, too, is going to be kosher. So you can have a case where the mother has fused hooves, the fetus inside has fused hooves, and meanwhile, it's kosher. And if I ask Rav Yosi Aglili, now you go ahead and you touch that which is inside, the dead fetus inside, are you tell me your tahor? So Rav Yosi Aglili says, well, it's a kosher species, right? You're going to be tahor. Based on the Jerusha, you should be tamei, because it is a holech arba besoch holech arba. So you should be tamei. So the Gemara says, lahachi ani kavachomer to Rav Chista. So the Gemara says that Rav Yitzchak says that Rav Yosi Aglili has the Jerusha that we just went through, plus he also subscribes to the kavachomer. The Kavachomer of Rav Chista was that if the fetus inside the mother is so subordinate to the mother that you could eat the fetus based on the shechita of the mother, so for sure, if the fetus inside the mother is dead, but the mother is still alive, so the mother is going to provide a protective environment so that the fetus is not going to transmit the tumah outside of the mother. Good. So even though the mother's hooves are fused, and even though the fetus's feet are fused, nevertheless, the Kav Chomer will arrive at that conclusion. The Gemara says, all well and good, there's one more, it's not even such a loose end. There's one more problem that needs to be tied up. So, Maskev l'Rav Rav Achdubui Barami Chazir B'mei Chazir to Lolitame de Mahachishmona B'mahachishmona Hu. Okay, so this is going to be checkmate, which is, consider now a pig. A pig is a non-kosher animal. And meanwhile, it is exceptional in that it has split feet. This is, in fact, the pasuk in the Torah. The Torah says that you need two simanim, and the Torah then goes ahead and identifies, and there's one animal throughout the entire animal world that is not kosher and has split hooves, and that, of course, is the chazir, that's the pig, because the Torah says it doesn't have both simanim. It doesn't chew its cud. Good. So now, but based on our drashas, according to Rav Yosi Aglili, everything is contingent on the hooves. If the hooves are split, so then the fetus inside is not a source of tumah. If the hooves are fused, it is a source of tumah. That's the drashas. But meanwhile, we know the pig, of course, is a non-kosher animal. So if you go back to our Mishnah and you plug it into the Mishnah, it doesn't work. Because the Mishnah says that a behemah tamea, when you touch the fetus inside of a behemah tamea, you're going to be tamei. The drushas say it's not so much a function of behemah tamea versus behemah tahara, it's a function of hooves and whether or not they're split or they're fused. The pig's hooves, not a non-mutated pig, a normal pig, of course, has split hooves. So if I just went with the drushas, the conclusion should be that the dead fetus inside of the mother pig is in fact not going to be tamei because it's split. And meanwhile, that's not Rav Yosi Aglili in the Mishnah. So Elam, Rav Nachman, Bar Yitzchak, so the Gemara says, okay. So what we're going to have now is a new approach. Now I say new approach. It could be that Rav Nachman, Bar Yitzchak is not rejecting Rav Yitzchak. It could be that's a supplemental point just to fill in this gap of the Chazir. Whatever, however, to learn it, mehacha. Nefesh ki siga b'chol tameo b'nivlas chaya tameo b'nivlas mehema tameo b'nivlas sheretz tame. Torah, in the end of Parshas Vayikra, Perek Hey, describes a person who comes into contact with the carcass of Chaya Tameya, Nevelas Behema Tameya, or Nevelas Sheretz Tameh. So, and by the way, let's fill in the blank. And then what? And then goes into the Beis HaMikdash while being Tameh. So now he's subject to bringing a Karban Chatos, a special Karban Chatos, Karban Olav Yored. We'll actually talk more about that later this morning. In the meantime, however, so strange the way the pasuk formulates it. He touched the carcass of a dead animal. Actually, the Torah says more. He touched the carcass of a dead non-kosher animal. non-kosher animal, non-kosher sheretz, non-kosher chaya. Right? It's strange. Meaning, right? Newsflash, which we all know: if you touch the carcass of a kosher animal, you're also going to be tamei. And if you go into the Beis Hamikdash, you're also going to be chayev on tumas mikdash. So why does the Torah say behema tamei, chaya tamei, sheretz tamei, sheretz tamei? Right, that's interesting. And the Gemara asks rhetorically, of course the halacha of nevela is not limited to a non-kosher animal. The halacha of nevela is to kosher and non-kosher. Elam, ubar tahor. So the only distinction to be made regarding a kosher versus non-kosher animal is the fetus inside. The fetus inside a non-kosher animal, even though the mother is alive, but the fetus is dead, that's tummy. The fetus of a kosher animal that's dead inside of a mother, who of course is alive, that's tahor. That is going to be the source for Rav Yosi Aglili. So the Gemara says, okay, now we have Rav Nachman Yitzchak, which is now a drasha. And it's a winning drasha because now it doesn't make this distinction of kosher versus non-kosher animals contingent on the hooves being split or fused, but rather on whether just simply it's kosher or not kosher. So really, Rav Nachman Yitzchak's drasha is outstanding. It's fantastic. And then what is there the need for the drasha of Rav Yitzchak? And that's why earlier I suggested that this is really a supplemental to Rav Yitzchak, because the Gemara clearly over here says we're not dismissing Rav Yitzchak. What are we going to do with the drasha of Rav Yitzchak? So lamali ilav de Rav Yitzchak hava mina kula lecha de Rebbe Udasa kamash malan. Well, if I just had the without the drasha of Rav Yitzchak, I could have imagined that the pasuk that he darshened earlier is there to teach us what Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi taught us. Now, if you're confused at this point in time, what did Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi teach us? So that actually is coming up later this morning. So stay tuned. That's coming up. But in the meantime, however, that's the Havamin I would have thought, that the whole pasuk is there to teach us that the limud of Rav Yehuda Hanasi, and therefore Rav Yitzchak is there to teach us. No, it's also coming to tell us the halacha regarding tumah and tahara vis-a-vis the fetus inside the mother. Okay, weiter. Tanya, Amar Rav Yonasan namti lo ben azayin. So the Bryce over here teaches the following. Rav Yonasan had a dialogue with ben azayin. Lamana nevelas behema tahara shemitama, v'nevelas behema tamea shemitama. Nevela chaya tamea shemitama, nevelas chaya tahara lo lamanu, minayin. Okay, so the carcass of a dead animal. And again, in animals, we could divide them in one of two different ways. One is chaya versus behema, which we already discussed back in the third parak of the Masechta. Behema and chaya is just simply a way of differentiating between domesticated and non-domesticated animals. Behemoths are the domesticated, chayas are the non-domesticated animals. There are halachic nafkaminas between the two. A chayah, you can eat the chaylev, behemoth, you can't eat the chaylev. Chayah requires kisui adam, behemoth does not require kisui adam. Good. But in other words, there is chayah and there's behemoth. Another way to dissect animals or bisect animals is kosher versus non-kosher. Okay, and meanwhile, it doesn't matter where you are on the four quadrants, meaning whether you're kosher chayah, non-kosher chayah, kosher behemoth, non-kosher behemoth, Lamaisa, with all four quadrants, if the animal dies, it is going to be a nevela, an avatuma. And if you either touch or carry a nevela, so you're going to be, you have now transmitted the tuma from the nevela, which is an av, to now you. Good. This is the halachas of nevela. We now have clear psukim throughout all of the Torah for three of the four quadrants. For three of the four, there's beferish psukim that teach us about tumas nevela. So how do I know about the fourth? And that's what this is the discussion that Rav Yonasan ben Azai are having with one with another. So he says, look, for behema tahara, it's a nevela. For behema tamea, we have a pasuk for nevela. For chaya tamea, is a nevela. For chaya tahara, we don't have a pasuk. And so lolamanu minayim. So where do I know it from? So nam li kol holech al kapav bechol hachaya haoleches. So he said, okay, so we're going to go back to a pasuk that we mentioned earlier this morning, that koholech ha-kapav b'chol ha-chaya oleches. So namti lo v'chi nemar v'chol chaya v'alo lo nemar ela b'chol ha-chaya. So we're not saying all chayas, we're saying b'chol ha-chaya. L'mahache kapayim b'chaya hu hida asa. It is mahache kapayim, those who walk on their paws, meaning non-split hoof animals. So namli uma yishmal omer b'davar hazeh. So he says, okay, so what does Yishmal say about this? Now Yishmal is Rebbe Yishmal. So they were colleagues. They spoke in this manner, as we'll see in just a moment. By the way, he's going to go quickly from Yishmal to Rebbe Yishmal. So namti lo v'chi amusmen behema. So he says it's from the following. The pasuk says v'chi amusmen behema. Right, that's the pasuk. Zu behema tameya. That's a reference to a behema tameya. Asher hi lachem la'achla, and the ones you can eat. So zu behema tara. Lamanu chaya b'chal behema behema b'chal chaya tara b'chal behema tara chaya tameya b'chal behema tameya. Behema tameya b'chal chaya tameya behema tara b'chal chaya tahara. So now we have an establishment that when it comes to nevela, the halachas of nevela, the Torah says that both by a behema tameya and a behema tahara, they are both going to be a nevela and avatama, and as we are now learning together, behema and chaya are interchangeable. Now, to be clear, when I say interchangeable, we know what a behema is definitionally. We know what a chaya is definitionally. Mm-hmm. However, the halachas that apply to one apply to another. Now, that, of course, is not always true, as I pointed out just a moment earlier. In other words, the chaylev and the kisui hadam is only by the heter chaylev, and the mitzvah of kisui hadam is only by a chaya, not by a behema. So obviously there are distinctions, but that's the exceptions. Mm-hmm. The general rule is that there is crossover between chaya and behema. What halachas apply to a chaya apply to a behema, and vice versa. And so when I say the terms are interchangeable, that's not precise. What I really mean is that the halachas are interchangeable. Whatever halacha applies to behema is going to apply to a chaya, and vice versa. And that's true for behema tahora and to chaya tahora. And behema tameya to chaya tameya. And of course, now we're going to go through every permutation, but for our purpose and our context, we're really only interested in one point. It fills in the gap. Meaning the question on the table was, how do I know that a chaya tahora is a nevela? That when a chaya tahora dies without a shechita, so it is a nevela. How do I know that? And the answer is going to be because of this limud that we just learned together, of Rebbe Yishmael. Now when Benazai hears this, Benazai realizes, recognizes immediately, that's right. That's emes.
Isn't anything that's dead is a nevela.
But that's not true. Meaning,
an oif is also dead, and it's not tumah.
What?
An oif is also dead, and it's not
tumah. Right. Right. Okay.
So everything is different.
Okay. Anyway. Yeah. Right. No. And achinami. But okay. And when Benazai heard this, so immediately he realized, he recognized that this is emes. We're in Ayin Aleph, Amud Aleph, we're three lines down. So Amar Li, Chaval Aben Azah Shloshimish as Rebbe Yishmael. And he says, you know, that's unfortunate for me. Meaning if I were Meshamish Rebbe Yishmael more frequently, so I would have known the answer to my own question. And it wasn't enough of Shimish Tamar Chacham. Okay. The Chai B'chla Behema, so Minalan. So we're going to now, as long as we learn this limud of Rebbe Yishmael, that chay and behema, the halachas are shared, and that chay is incorporated within behema, and behema is incorporated within chaya. So first we're going to establish, how did Rebbe Yishmael know that? Benazai, it's interesting. Benazai was mekabel right away. Yeah. Right? I guess Benazai's knowledge of Chumash was so good, like he heard, he said, oh yeah. And then in his mind, he just ping-ponged through all the various psukim. But the Gemara now is just going to hold our hand and take us through the psukim that show us that this is in fact so. So, chaya b'chal behema minalan. How do I know that chaya is included within the category of behema? Dichsiv, the pasuk says, "Zos behema asher tochlu." So the Torah in Parshas Re introduces us to the behemas that we're allowed to eat, and then shor sek zavim ayal v'tzvi v'achmor. So then the Torah introduces us to behemas, right? Yeah. No, not behem. Meaning yes, behemas, but also chayas. Right, ayal tzvi v'achmor, ayal over here, by the way, not ayal, which is a ram, which is a behema, but ayal. Okay, I'm not sure if I said it right 7.5 years ago. So, always time for a correction. And ayal is a chaya. It's translated as some sort of deer, heart, whatever the case is. So ayal v'tzvi v'achmor. So hakeh said chaya b'chla behema. So that means to say that even though the Torah opens up as here's a category of behemah and it's listing the chaya as good, so chaya now is incorporated in behemah. And we could do it the other way as well. Behema bechlal chayim minalim dechziv zosa chayim shetochlu. Mikol ha-behema she'al ha'aretz kol mafreses parsa. So we go back to Parsha Shemini. The Torah says, and these are the chayim that you're allowed to eat. And then example, behema. Behema is given as an example. So you see that the term chayim incorporates in it both chayim and behema. So, ha-ketzad behema bechlal chayim, I'm sorry, behema bechlal chayim. Chayatara b'chla behematara. Now the chayatara is included in behematara, so good. So now we have our incorporations. Meaning, incorporated in behema, you have the chayas. Incorporated in chayas, you have the behemas. And now we're going to move over to the halachas. So now that we know that everything is incorporated, so now how does that play out halachically? Gemara is now going to take us step by step. Step by step. Again, these are the general rules, but with the exceptions. The Torah tells us the exceptions. Okay, but right. Good. You recognize now the importance of realizing that even though they're incorporated, but they're still different. Okay. Chaya Torah b'chlach behemah Torah l'simanim. So first of all, chaya of a kosher animal, behemah of a kosher animal. So we could have figured it out, but the Gemara says a beferish simanim, identification of what is a kosher animal. So for behemah and chaya, it's the same markers: split hooves, chewing its cud, viter. Chaya tameima b'chal behema tameya, non-kosher chaya, non-kosher behema, leharva, that's the iser of revia. One is not allowed to hitch together two different animals. Interesting, by the way, Shitas HaRambam, is that for this iser, you have to be hitching a kosher and a non-kosher side by side. So, but anyway, the... Harva is a lot of things.
No, it could be a hitching.
Harva
is breeding.
Am I coming in a minute?
I don't think it's
that. Wait, but are you saying that as pshat over here in Agamara?
Harva is touch breeding.
Harva, yeah, that's.
Okay.
It
says breeding over here?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. Fine. So behema tamei b'chal chaya tamei lechiderebi. Now, as far as behema tamei is concerned, together with chaya tamei, so that is that to teach us the halacha of Rebbe, Ditanya. And here now we go back to Vayikra Perikei, and we go and we address the question which I addressed already once earlier, and that is that you come into contact with a nevela. And you go into the base of Mikdash, so now you're in violation of Torah's Mikdash. But as we went through the Pesukim already, the Pesukim said, and what did you touch? So the Pesukim say that you touched a Chaya Tameya or a Behema Tameya. Ditanya, Rebbe Omer, Akrani Chaya Behema, Lama Nemra, Nemra Khan, Behema Tameya, Benemra Lahalan, Behema Tameya, Malahalan, Tumas Kodesh, Avkan, Tumas Kodesh. So just like over there it's Tumas Kodesh, so too over here it's Tumas Kodesh. Meaning it allows us to know that it's not just the touching of the nevela that's going to warrant a carbon olav yored. But rather, it's the touching of the carbon plus going into the Beis HaMikdash while in that state of Tumah. Behemah Torah b'chal chaya Torah, I'm sorry, Behemah Torah b'chal chaya Torah liyitzira. As far as now understanding what the halacha is regarding a behemah Torah in being included in Chaya Tahara, that's for the halacha of Yitzira. Did not. Now this is based on a Mishnah in Nida. A woman gives birth, so she is going to go through a stage of Tuma and Tahara. If she gives birth to a boy, she is Tami for 7 days and then Tahara for the next 33 days. If she gives birth to a girl, those numbers get doubled. 14 and 66. And meanwhile, what if she gives birth to something that does not look like a human? So, right, unusual, but mutation. So she gave birth to something which was mutated to the point where it does not look like a human, it looks like an animal. So what would be the halacha there? Is that a leida? And furthermore, based on the gender of whatever came out of her, if it could be identified in terms of its gender, is she going to go through the Tumah Tahara of a regular woman who gave birth? So the truth of the matter is it's a machlokes hatanaim, but for our purposes right now, we're focusing on the sheet of Rav Meir, who says that this is in fact going to be considered a leida, plus the gender, if we can identify the gender of whatever came out of her, is going to determine the number of days that she is Tameya and Tahora. Didnan, the Mishnah says, Amapels, min behim achaya, v'oth, min bein Tameya and bein Tahora, im zachar teshev zachar, im nekeva teshev nekeva, and yodeh teshev zachar nekeva divrei Meir. So Meir says that, in fact, she is going to be considered having given birth, halachically, if we can identify gender. So then, for a boy, 7 and 33, for a girl, 14 and 66, if we cannot identify gender, it's still a leida, but then she's going to have to be machmir. On the side that she may have had a girl, she'll be tamer for 14 days. But on the side that she had a boy, she will only be tamer for, now I'll say 33 days, but it's really 33 minus 7. Okay. Anyway. And according to the Chachamim, if it's not Tzuras Adam, if it's not a human that came out of her, so then that is not a Leda, and she is not Tameya. But Legabe, the Halach of Rav Meir, so we see over here that either a Chaya or a Behema, doesn't matter what came out of her, is in fact going to be considered a Leda. And that's what we learn from all these Halachas of incorporation, that Chaya is subsumed under Behema, and Behema is subsumed under Chaya. Okay. And with all that said, we are now up to the end of the first sugya of this morning, Ula Rabbanan. Now, according to the Chachamim, now Rashi says that this line of the Gemara takes us way back. Because what we had over here is, if you remember how all this discussion developed, we started with a machlokis in the Mishnah between the Chachamim and Rav Yosi Aglili. And what was the limud for Rav Yosi Aglili? For the Chachamim, we said it was a kal v'chomer. But for the Rav Yosi, Shitas Rav Yosi Aglili, that only if I touch the dead fetus in a Behema Tameya, then and only then you're going to be Tamei, as opposed to Behema Torah. And what was the limud for Rav Yosi Aglili? And so that is, that's a long answer. In fact, that's so far pretty much been our entire sugya this morning. And that is, first there was the Shita of Rav Yitzchak, then there was the Shita of Rav Nachman Yitzchak. Why did I need Rav Yitzchak if I already had Rav Nachman Yitzchak? Okay, that's a long answer. But still, and that then led to our discussion over here of Nevela V'chayin, Nevela V'behema, what incorporation, etc., etc. And now, after all said and done, we are now going all the way back. Now, if you are the Chachamim, meaning the Tanakam of our Mishnah, what are you doing with all these Pesukim? What are you doing with all these Limudim? Ula Rabbanan Haikra Lama Likula L'Chad Rebbe Udasa. So why aren't the Chachamim darshaning the Pesuk like Rav Yosi Aglili? And the answer is, because all the Pesukim that was darshan by Rav Yitzchak, according to the Chachamim, is not there to teach us the halachas of Rav Yosi Aglili, but is there to exclusively teach the halachas of Rebbe. Rebbe, we just learned a couple of moments earlier, the halachas of Tumas Mikdash VeKadashav, and the Limud, that you are coming into contact with the Nevela, you go into the Beis HaMikdash, that is the only thing dedicated from that Pasuk, learned from that Pasuk, and not the drushas regarding Behema Tameya and versus Behema Tahara. We start with the Mishnah 9 Aleph and Aleph, and we are pressing forward in our Perek. So we are really focusing on animals. Chulin in general is focusing on animals. But we got on to the discussion of Uber b'mei ima, the status of a fetus. The status of a fetus vis-a-vis the halachas of kashrus. Status of the fetus of an animal regarding halachas of tumah tahara. And so now our next Mishnah is going to be talking about the status of a fetus vis-a-vis a human fetus and tumah tahara. Okay, here's what we know as a starting point. So Rachmanis, once a person passes, so the remains of that person now is an avatama. Not just an avatama, but avi avosatama. It is the highest source of tuma. Come into contact with that, so you are going to be, you yourself are going to be an avatama, right? By coming into contact with human remains, with a mace. Not only does it give off tuma through maga, but also through masa, and even through Oel as well. Some of the very basics regarding Tumas Mace. Our discussion and our mission is going to be the following. So Rachmanis, the woman now is pregnant, and she now the fetus inside of her is no longer alive. So is this fetus inside of her going to be an av hatuma? And now the answer is yes. But while inside of the mother, so that tumma is not transmitted, the mother is going to be serving for her, for that fetus, a protection for the outside world. That tumma is not going to be transmitted into the outside world. The Mishnah is about to teach us, but let's say someone actually makes physical contact with the fetus, so that midwife who makes physical contact with the fetus, she's going to be tumma. Ha'isha shemes v'lada b'soch me'eha. So Rachmanus, a woman where the fetus inside of her is now dead. Upashta chayas yada v'naga bo. And the chaya inserts her hand into the mother, into the womb, and touches the dead fetus. Hachaya tameya tumashiva. So the chaya now came into contact with a mace. She is going to be tame mace to the full extent. She will now have to go through the tahara process of 7 days with the solution of the paraduma in order for her to be tahara. Vehaisha, please wait. Vehaisha tahara ad sheyetze havlad. Now, as far as the mother is concerned, the mother is not going to be tamea, and she will not become tamea until the emergence of the fetus.
How do they know that the fetus was dead?
Apparently, they knew back then.
Not moving.
Right. They must have had ways of knowing. Amar Rabba, kishem shetuma blua ainu mitame kach tahara blua ainu mitame. So we are now going to be learning two basic concepts. These are klale hashas that today in Chulin daf ayin aleph. So this is really the main source of these halachas. We hear these halachas throughout all of Shas, and today is really the makor. It's the main source of these halachas. One is being tuma blua, and the other one being tahara blua. And tuma blua and tahara blua is these ideas where if I have a source of tuma, but it's absorbed and enveloped in a protective layering. In this case, that would be a mother. So the tuma now is contained and confined in that area. Tahara blua is the converse, where the outside is tame, but the object, the item which is susceptible to tuma, is enveloped and inside of something, so that is going to be protected and not going to become tameh. So there's tameh blua and tahara blua. Now the truth of the matter is that we're going to be citing the Gemara classically. Gemara doesn't give svaras in terms of why this is so, right? Why is something which is blua going to be in both? By the way, we're saying both ways. In other words, the tumah is contained and the tahara is going to be protected. And why should that be the case? So again, you know the Gemara well enough, where the Gemara does not give svaras to these halachas, but rather it's just simply it's exeris akasif. And there is.
By a chicken and an egg, the chicken doesn't impart into the egg, and over here we see differently, right?
The chicken and an egg. Yeah, yes, but in other words, right. But our topic today is strictly about tuma tahara. So there is an interesting Rashi. It took me a second to find it. There's an interesting Rashi over here. A second wide line Rashi Milo Askina. Now, I know it's on the Gemara, the upcoming, which we haven't done yet. But Rashi writes over here, just as a svara, to help us understand what is the concept behind tuma blua. Amma michevan, I skipped now to the third wide line. Amma michevan shenivla'a harehi kimi'ucheles le'inyan letame. So once it's absorbed, once it's enveloped, once it's contained in something else, it's like mi'ucheles. Now, to translate the word literally, so it means it's like digested. Now, I know that's a funny way to describe a fetus inside of a mother. So over here, digestion over here just simply means like, and you'll see why the analogy comes up in just a moment, food inside of you. In other words, food inside of you. Once the food is inside of your body, it's now part and parcel of your body. It sounds like I'm saying something like bittul. But in other words, but it's digested, it's no longer food. So when you have one item inside of another item, so that item basically loses its identity and becomes subordinate to the host that is within. That's probably what Rashi means. But anyway, that's the best we're going to get today. It's not not the only svara, but in terms of on the daf, it's the best we're going to get in terms of a svara of understanding Tuma Blua versus Tahara Blua, and Tahara Blua. So anyway, so let's go step by step. Gemara's going to take us through both of these concepts. So, Tuma Blua Minalan. And so now we are going to be addressing this, the basic question of what is the source in the Torah of Tuma Blua? And again, the idea of Tuma Blua is that when you have something which is a source of Tuma, but enveloped in something else, so that Tuma is contained. How do I know that? So, Dichsev Alcha Minivla Sayicha Beis Begadav. So once again, we turn back to Parsha Shmini in the Pesukim regarding Tuma Tahara, and the Torah says that if you eat from the nevela of a bird, so yichabes begadav, you're going to be tame. Okay? Tuma sof, Tuma nivlas of tahor. Eating the nevela of a kosher bird, so touching it, no Tuma. Carrying it, no Tuma. Eating it, you're tame. Okay? It's unusual, but that's the halacha. Now, milo askin edacho samach l'shkiyas achama v'kama rechman tahor. And the Gemara now is constructing the following scenario. Look, the Torah doesn't say when you ate it, right? You could have eaten in the morning, couldn't even in the afternoon, you couldn't eat it in the very late afternoon. Now, what is the Tahara process after you are Tamei? So you tov on the mikvah, and you experience Erev Shemesh, and you're good. Now let's consider. You just ate Nivlas of Tahor. You just ate the Nevela. A half an hour before Shkia. We can even make it 5 minutes before Shkia. Okay, make it more exciting. So, and then what do? You run to the mikvah. And now, you dunked in the mikvah, you came out of the mikvah, and then you did so right before sunset, and now you experience Erev Shemesh. Now consider, the nevela is still sitting inside of you. And it's not digested yet. And that's why, by the way, Rashi uses the words, harei kuma ukal. It's not yet digested. In other words, we know digestion takes some time. So over here, why not make the argument that you're still Tame, right? But we don't make that argument. So what do you see over here? So you see that because it's Tuma Blua, so the Tuma is contained. So the Gemara says, interesting. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know what? You know why you're not Tame? Let's take Tuma Blua off the table. Maybe you're not Tame because it's digested. Now, when we say digested, what is the definition of digested? So actually, it's a machlokas. So, Hanichal Rabbi Yochanan Damar Achazu Vachazu Ad Lekel of Shapir. Now, Rabbi Yochanan says that for something to be so deformed, decomposed, degraded, it's only at the point where the dog no longer wants to eat it. So the Gemara says, so if that's our definition of digested, so then Tuma Blua comes back onto the table, because actually it's an excellent raya. Because if, let's say, 10 minutes after you ate it, you told them the mikvah, you had Erev Shemesh, and it's 10 minutes later. If you were to regurgitate it, would a dog eat it? Yeah, no. Sure, yes. Sure. So in other words, so why are you not Tame? Oh, so the answer must be Tuma Blua. Good. So if you subscribe to Rav Yochanan's definition of what digestion is, so then the Tuma Blua becomes now, it becomes the answer. Ela labar padadama tuma chamur lager v'tuma kala ad lekelev, mishum delochazihu, I'm sorry, mishum delochazihu lagerhu. But if we're going to go with Bar Pada's definition, now according to Bar Pada, if a ger is no longer interested in eating it, so then it is considered no longer a nevela. Now, I'm simplifying it, by the way, because he does make a distinction between Tuma Chamura versus Tuma Kala. But just to make the point as simple as possible. In other words, if a ger is not going to eat it now, a ger standard of consumption is much higher than that of a dog. So the ger will be disgusted by it immediately. Good. So that means to say now that you put it in your mouth and you take it out, and the gear, you pass it over to the gear, and say, and you say, look, it just didn't sit well with me. But I'll tell you what, though. Yeah, I see you're hungry. So you know what? Here, a little bit of stucco, making me perhaps one of the nicest guys on God's good earth. Okay, I exaggerate just a little bit. But according to Bar Pada, if he's disgusted by it, which he will be, so at that point in time now, it's no longer considered a nevela and an avatuma. And if that's true now, according to Bar Pada, so why is it that you're no longer tame? So we don't need now Tuma Blua as being our answer. The answer is because it's disgusting for a ger. So the Gemara gives such an interesting answer. So the Gemara says, look, if you did it right in front of the ger, so he would be disgusted. But let's say he didn't know. So you put it in your mouth, And then you spit it up, and he didn't know. Now, the Gemara, obviously, let's just make the point as clearly as possible. The Gemara is not advocating. Right. The Gemara is not condoning. The Gemara is just simply saying, in terms of definition of what is and what is not considered a loss of status of Nevela, it doesn't necessarily lose the status of Nevela. So once we're here and it has not lost the status of Nevela, so now we can go back to our question. So why aren't you Tameh? If you just went to the mikvah and you just had Erev Shemesh and you ate this off 10 minutes ago, and it's not lost its status of Nevela, so why aren't you Tameh? And the answer is, Tameh B'lua, good. Ashkechan Tameh B'lua, Tahara B'lua, Minalan, good. We have a source for Tameh B'lua. What about Tahara B'lua? So Kav HaChomer. So the Gemara says, well, I'll make the following argument. Makli Cheres HaMukav Tameh P'sil Sheinu Matzil Al Tameh Shebesocho Milatameh. So the Gemara says, look, let's take a look at our earthenware vessel that's sealed. And meanwhile, if I have a mace inside of it, and there is not a tefach of airspace between the mace and the roof of the earthenware vessel, so do you know what happens with the tuma? It goes and it penetrates right out. It goes right out. So shebetoch matam adam amar tuma v'tzitzah bokas v'ola ad l'rakia. And so the nature of a earthenware vessel, even though, as we're going to see in just a moment, it's got really interesting properties, but one of the properties is not that it's able to contain tuma. And meanwhile, what can it do in terms of tahara? It could protect tahara. So matzel atar shebetochem latameh, it could protect tahara inside of it, as long as it's sealed. You can be in a room. There could be a mace in the room. But if you have a sealed earthenware vessel, anything inside of it will be protected from becoming tameh. So now, Adam, as we turn now to the top of the next Talmud, shematzel al tumah shebetochem latameh, enodin shematzel al tahara shebetochem latameh. So now let's take our Kav HaChomer. So if we can see that an earthenware vessel, which is not able to contain tuma, but is able to protect tahara, a human who is able to contain tuma for sure is able to protect tahara. That's the Kav HaChomer. So the Gemara says, Malik L'cher, Shekenin Matamim Migabo. Tamar Badim, Shematamim Migabo. So the Gemara says, what an interesting comparison for a Kav HaChomer, comparing a human to an earthenware vessel. Did you know that by an earthenware vessel, if you touch the outside of an earthenware vessel, it's not going to become tameh. Its tuma only is transmitted internally from the interior airspace. Meanwhile, when it comes to a human can become tameh from the outside. So the Gemara says, so how does the Kav HaChomer work if we're not dealing with the same operating principles? So tamar ba'adam shematamim migabo. So atu anan migabo, tamar migabo. Tamar ba'adam shematamim migabo. I'm sorry, tamar ba'adam shematamim migabo. Atu anan migabo kamrinan mitocho kamrinan. So the Gemara says, you're right, but you're not affecting our halacha, because we're talking about things which are enveloped inside. So as long as we're comparing things which are enveloped inside, the Kav HaChomer is beautiful. In fact, the Gemara says it's more than beautiful. So the Gemara says, Adarabba, Kli Cheres Chamor Shekem Metamei Me'aviro. So the Gemara says, Adarabba, the interior of the Kli Cheres, think about how sensitive it is, the interior of the Kli Cheres. I don't even need contact of the Tuma in the inside of the Kli Cheres in order for the Tuma to spread out into the interior. So you see that when we're talking about the Avir of the Kli Cheres, so vis-a-vis Tuma, so it's a train wreck. Right? It's so sensitive. Right, you put tuma inside of it. Is the tuma contained? No, it's not contained. Does the tuma spread? Tuma spreads in the inside of a kli cheres even without contact. So, and meanwhile, the kli cheres is able to protect the tahara inside. Now, when talking about a human, so we're able to contain tuma. So, if we're able to contain tuma, so al achas kama v'chama, how much more so are we able now to protect tahara from that which is inside? Okay, so that is right now going to be our starting point for the discussion of how do we know the source of Tahara Blua. Let's quickly chazara. Today we finished off the sugya of the touching of a fetus animal, a dead fetus inside of an animal. Are you going to be tummy for touching it? And again, I'll reiterate this now for the third time. Tuma Blua does not become a talking point over there. Right, Tosha's already made that point. But anyway, are you going to become tummy? So the Tanakhama says, no, you're not going to be tummy, and it does not matter if you touch the fetus of a kosher or non-kosher animal. Rav Yosef Galili in the Mishnah made a distinction between kosher versus non-kosher animal. What is the source of Rav Yosef Galili? So that is nearly an amud of Gemara looking for the source of Rav Yosef Galili. We learned, we went over some very basic concepts today. Chaya is incorporated in Behema. Behema is incorporated in Chaya. And how does that play out halachically? So it plays out in four different permutations that we went over this morning. And then we moved on to the topic of coming into contact with a dead fetus inside of a human mother. And are you tameh? So if you touch the fetus, the midwife touches the fetus, she's going to be tameh. But as far as the mother's concerned, she is not going to be tameh. Why? So this introduces us to the concept of tumah blua, which we went over the source of tumah blua in today's daf. And then, as long as we talked about tumah blua, we also talked about tahara blua as well, where if I have something contained in inside of a human, so it will be protected from becoming tameh. What the source of that is, so we started that with a kavachomer.